Hello, and thank you for joining us for episode 7 of the Kind Stop the Bad podcast series. In this episode, we're discussing the cyber risks facing the global maritime industry. I'm Melanie Hayes, Chief Marketing Officer at Kind, and today I'm joined by Kind CEO Andy Thomas and our very special guest, Anthony Hess from Aceris, the specialist cyber incident response and forensics firm that helps organisations with responding to, recovering from, and investigating cyber incidents. Hi both, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi Melanie.
Hi Melanie.
So at Kind, we've started to see an increase in the number of cyber attacks facing the maritime industry, particularly in the last 12 months. And this is an industry I know you're particularly interested in, Andy, as it involves boats. So cyber risks are clearly of concern to the industry, as effective from 1st of January this year, there are now new IMO requirements for integrating cyber risks into existing onboard safety management systems to ensure vessel operations are protected from potentially catastrophic cyber attacks. So are cyber attacks more prevalent now in the maritime industry, or have they always been there? And what makes them such an attractive target to cyber criminals? And perhaps I could start with you, Anthony. In your opinion, is the maritime sector particularly at risk of cyber attacks? Or is this threat real?
Thank you, Melanie. I think that's a great question. Shipping is an industry that people are so used to having. It's almost invisible in a sense. You know, it's not something you really think about. Even though it's been around for centuries, unlike many newer sectors, you don't really see the same level of public awareness. Despite its size and importance to the economy, I think you're far more likely to see news about other consumer-facing industries or, you know, things that are very obvious to the average person. You know, I think unless someone happens to live near a major port, the average person doesn't even really grasp the actual scale of the industry. So I think considering this perspective, you know, most people just aren't aware of shipping as an industry. It would be reasonable to assume that it would be somewhat under the radar of cyber criminals as well. We have a lot of other sectors that look a lot more attractive. You look at the government sector, you know, financial services in particular, banks, or even healthcare organizations with the sensitive information they're holding, or the current pandemic, the vaccine development information. Although, you know, it is true that these other sectors do see a higher level of cyber risk and certainly a higher level of reported cyber attacks. Like any other industry where money is being made, the maritime industry does hold interest to cyber attackers. The fact is that the vast majority of significant cyber attacks these days are conducted by criminals, usually organized crime. Sometimes it might be a small group that's rented a service, but generally what we're talking about are organized criminals, and their goal is to make money. And ultimately, this makes any industry a potential target. And the industries that have been traditionally less focused on cybersecurity are even better targets. According to the UK Chamber of Shipping, the UK shipping technology sector, you know, sort of the all-encompassing technology for the maritime industry alone, is now $4 billion industry and is estimated to be worth $13 billion per year by 2030. So it's growing very quickly, is very large, and you look at it from a global perspective, it's also really, really lucrative, the shipping industry, because it's responsible for the transport of around 90% of the world's trade. Raw materials, goods, energy tend to not really think about it, like I said earlier, but the world's trade is being done by shipping much more than it's being done by other means. This alone really implies that maritime is hugely important to the world, and possible ramifications on the sector can be a lot more far-reaching and damaging than you might originally think. Now, when I looked at risks in the sector, I think kind of break them into a couple of different areas. They are quite different in terms of their impact and in terms of the frequency. You have the traditional office-based attacks. These are often things like ransomware, business email compromise, or theft of valuable data. These are all really actually pretty well understood as a cyber risk, and they look really similar to attacks in other sectors. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes you have certain industries that are perhaps a bit less developed encountering these attacks, and I would consider this industry to be one of those. And so they really are in a good position to learn from what other industries have done to deal with them. However, I think there's another set of risks as well, which I think is really interesting. And these are the attacks against the operational technology. You look at ships nowadays, and they're becoming more and more automated. Things that were previously done in a non-digital way are being transformed into adopting relatively common technologies taken from the sort of normal PC world being adapted into these situations. And that really opens up a lot of new possible avenues for cyber attacks. So coming back to the original question, is the maritime industry at risk of cyber attack? I think the answer is absolutely. It's a very real threat. I think the timing for the new regulations couldn't be better. It's absolutely something that's needed.
That's wonderful, Anthony. Some really interesting figures you threw in there. And clearly the threat is real. Perhaps, Andy, you could shed some light on what exactly makes maritime such an attractive target for cyber criminals. What would you say are the most vulnerable aspects?
Oh, thanks, Melanie, of course. Well, to start, modern ships are equipped with a lot of new operational technology systems. Now, Anthony referred to some of this as being a really present and real risk factor and attack method. But some of those systems are so complex. Complex cargo management technology, automated identification systems, GPS systems, electronic chart displays, the list goes on. And until recent years, all these systems were pretty commonly isolated from each other and from the land and from any external connections to the internet or indeed shore-based systems. However, the sort of digital evolution of shipping that's taking place and the rapid change that's happened within the industry is leading to sort of an integration of these two worlds, which make shipping operations significantly more efficient, but on the other hand, making the vessels themselves and the technology that's on them potentially more exposed. So there's sort of a number of opportunities that pop up in these assets that mean that they are then become really quite interesting targets for cyber criminals or organized crime. And there's a lack of inbuilt encryption or authentication in many of the navigation systems. I think this is one of the most significant issues that's causing additional risk right now. For example, automatic identification systems, which are a very key navigation tool that's used in vessel positioning and tracking, have been, I hate to use the word poorly designed, but it is poor design at the protocol level. And it allows attackers to abuse the system by generating automated commands and transmitting false AIS messages. This potentially has quite some significant consequences, as you can imagine, when you can make a boat steer itself to a certain extent, which is not healthy for anybody. GPS itself can be jammed. It's a relatively uncomplicated technique, and it's been used already by attackers to produce falsified locations for boats or conceal locations for the ships themselves. And it's also hijacking systems, hijacking cargo and containers on land. There's a strong reliance on legacy systems, and outdated hardware within the maritime industry is also a concern. It's a persistent problem that inevitably, as organizations transform themselves and grow, there's a long list of legacy operational infrastructure that needs to be dealt with and secured. Large ships are expensive and take a long time to build. So the tail of technology that's been deployed within the industry is quite significant. And these systems very often are far more exposed to attack than the more efficiently designed newer systems. And I think, last but not least, one of the most overlooked issues is third-party access to this infrastructure. So it's not just the employees of the shipping company themselves, but it's the wide range of third parties that have access to the infrastructure necessary not only to pilot the boat, but also dock the boat and remove the cargo and ship that on. And that means that the actual potential for exploitation, the potential for vulnerability, and the potential indeed for abuse, quite significantly raised.
Thanks, Andy. That gives us a really good understanding of why the maritime industry is actually more susceptible to cyber attacks than one might realise to start with. Anthony, would you have any real-life examples of cyber attacks in the sector that you could share with us?
Yes, absolutely. But the first case that always crosses my mind when someone talks about maritime was the devastating cyber attack that involved Maersk, the transport and logistics conglomerate, back in 2017. It was really interesting. The company itself wasn't targeted specifically. It was just collateral damage from the NotPetya attack, which was believed to be state-sponsored. It's been a long 3 to 4 years since then of similar large ransomware attacks, but NotPetya was noteworthy as an early example of a large-scale, large-impact attack. Before that, ransomware attacks were often quite small, relatively easy to deal with. It really changed, in my mind, the nature of these attacks. Took advantage of some security vulnerabilities in Windows. You know, as a result, there was significant disruption to the operations by delaying ships, by paralyzing company emails and affecting multiple business units and terminals, causing the ports to shut down. The aftermath of the attack forced the company to rebuild its network of 4,000 servers and 45,000 PCs. Pretty good size environment and pretty huge amount of business interruption loss there. Over $300 million was reported as a loss. Like with most of the ransomware attacks these days, the real losses are generated by business interruption. And especially in the early days, people just did not have the skill set for fast rebuilds. And so back then, still an issue today, but back then in particular, you'd often find companies down for weeks as a result of NotPetya. And this was no exception. I think another example that's interesting because it's a bit different. Australian-based global ferry and defense ship builder Austal was hit by a cyber attack that breached the company's data management systems in late 2018. The attackers managed to steal internal data, including personal details of Austal's employees and clients, ship design drawings, and some financial info for subcontractors. These attackers actually did offer some of this stolen data on the dark web for sale. And it really is quite dangerous, depending on the data that's stolen. The investigation actually found that the company was initially breached using stolen login credentials, which also was purchased by attackers on the dark web. These credentials can be found in different ways. The attackers will send a phishing link and someone will click it and they'll give up their login information. Or sometimes you see password reuse across different sites. Or, you know, lastly, and this is one that's been the case in my entire 25-year career, people pick weak passwords and they're easily cracked. Between those different avenues, it is possible to get someone's password and to get into these systems if it's not designed well to prevent it. These are really just two examples, out of a number of similar cyber incidents. There are a number more we could talk about. I think maintaining the operational safety of these systems, you know, really is the number one priority. You would never leave a port with malfunctioning generator, as it's really an obvious operational risk. You know, I think the malfunctioning or compromised operational technology systems, for example, a compromised electronic chart display and information system that could result in a failure to be able to navigate and safety of personnel on board, is quite a similar situation. It is a safety issue.
You're absolutely right, Anthony. And both of your examples highlight indeed the importance of the timely addressing of existing vulnerabilities, both ashore and on board. But maybe I'd go to you, Andy. Do you think this is actually really being addressed by the maritime organisations?
Well, I think where we are, we're at an interesting point for the development of the security posture, attitude, and cyber risk management within the maritime industry. I mean, we've done some of our own research exploring the cyber risks facing, actually it was the top 100 world's container ports, and it revealed quite staggering results. In fact, almost every organization we looked at in that sample set were vulnerable to having their email addresses spoofed. And on top of that, more than half of them were running at least one service with a well-known and well-published and widely circulated vulnerability. Of course, these are disturbing figures and totally not something you'd expect given the rapidly evolving threat landscape across maritime. There may be various reasons for the sector's lack of preparedness. So the access to the right cyber skills within a business is a challenge for every organization operating now, period. There's a very big, large skills gap in the market. Secondly, though, there's that level of awareness training to employees. And it's going back a couple of years, but the University of Coventry did some research into the level of training that was happening within the maritime industry, and virtually nobody was carrying out any sort of cyber awareness training for staff at that point. Now, given the changes that have been coming through from the maritime organization and the standards institutes that are beginning to enforce a level or prescribe a level of standard cyber risk readiness for maritime organizations, that should be beginning to change because staff training, awareness training is a critical element in anybody's risk management approach. Also, what's interesting as well is, you know, obviously maritime is an industry that's been around for hundreds, thousands of years, and it does tend to get itself organized. And just very recently, an organization called DNK, which is in Norway, in collaboration with the Norwegian Ship Owners Association, has created the Norwegian Maritime Cyber Resilience Center, or NORMA, as it's known. Now, what's really interesting about that is they've taken the bull by the horns for their sort of 400 or 500 members and the 4,000 or 5,000 ships that they operate, and trying to create a centralized cybersecurity services capability that all their members can benefit from. And that therefore begins to address and create a center of excellence, which means that the ship owners themselves and the operators can rely on that service to be able to give them a higher degree of cybersecurity and cyber risk awareness, without having to make all the investment and hire all the skills locally in each business, which is obviously not feasible. I think that element in particular shows that the industry is stepping up to the challenge, but all of it shows the absolute critical importance of the activity that actually lies at everything that the Heart of Kind does, which is helping every organization identify, understand, and then be able to mitigate the risks that they face.
That's really interesting, Andy. Thank you for that and for that last example. So following on from what you're talking about, Kind being able to help, but there's also that perennial principle of prevention being better than cure, which is what I think you're saying. What steps do we think maritime organisations can take to protect themselves against cyber attacks? And I'll ask you that, Anthony.
Yes, I would say that due to how common they are, I think we have a pretty good idea these days of how to prevent and mitigate common office-based ransomware attacks or, you know, other similar common cyber crimes. These attacks are very highly likely against unsecured targets, and they're very easy to understand, and they have a big business impact, as we talked about earlier with Maersk. I think one of the biggest challenges when you're trying to spend or trying to, you know, develop your cybersecurity program is figuring out what do you do first. Say it's a priority. I look at things like the wide deployment of multi-factor authentication. I spoke a little bit earlier around passwords and the difficulty and all the different ways you can attack a system and compromise people's passwords. Multi-factor authentication, while it's not perfect and you can find exploits, it makes it much more difficult. Some other tools that I like are endpoint detection and response. I think a high quality EDR system, as they're called, really makes a big difference in terms of an attacker being able to move through the system and use malware and other types of automation to help, you know, their compromise. You know, a strong patching program, a strong, you know, governance of your security environment, you know, making sure it's, you know, up to date and comprehensively up to date is actually really difficult in a large company. And I'd say lastly, and this is a really big area, focusing on secure design and configuration makes a big difference, both on the prevention side, but also on the mitigation side. So thinking through, you know, what kind of attacks are we going to face and how can we design around it so that we have different layers of defense that'll help us prevent and mitigate. I think ship-based attacks, often what I say is, I ask people to have a bit of imagination around it. And I think that's because the relative lack of public information around this, you know, it, combined with the emerging nature of the threat, it requires that you think a bit about it. And so what I try to do is I'll look at common vulnerabilities, you know, which tell you if something is possible. And you often find this, there's a lot of research out there into vulnerabilities. There's a lot of security testing that can happen and does happen today versus motivation / ease of conducting some of these things. So if I would look at if using these cyber technologies is harder than doing it in a traditional way, then there's no point in making that happen. There's no point in doing it that way. So to help conceptualize what is reasonable to worry about, I recommend taking a risk-based approach and focusing on scenarios to understand where to start, rather than just going through a really broad checklist. I think scenarios, realistic, you know, risks that you're facing are really the way to go. So if I'm looking at simplicity of exploiting and things that I think are more common to less common, I would start by looking at operational security. And what that means is the information that about your operations, you know, let's say ship locations, other information around how you're conducting your business. Look at that first, make sure that it's not very easy for an attacker to gain that information. Secondly, as these are getting harder to conduct, I would say the impact is greater. So that's why it's important to kind of go down this list. Remote access is really next on my list. So if you can conduct an attack against a ship remotely, that is a high risk and needs to be dealt with. And then lastly, you know, are sort of the on-ship security items. Do you need physical access? Probability of that happening or the ease of that happening is up significantly. So the next thing that I think is important is to put in place a comprehensive testing program and focus on the overall architecture of the ship, including integration of lots of different third-party components. And the reason for that is that people are putting together these big complex systems, and there's lots of interactions that you don't predict, and you know, lots of security exploits that can be created of the, you know, out of the fact that you have different systems being all plugged in together without a real comprehensive overview of how they function. And one of the ways you can really find that out is by using real-world security testing. And when I say real-world, what I mean by that are that you have what are called red teams. So essentially, you have security testers that are given carte blanche to just come in and figure out how they can compromise the ship, and then they'll port at the end of it. I think it's really useful to use that. And then the last thing, something to really help detect and mitigate, is to train the crews how to adapt to the cyber attacks. You know, one of the examples I like to use is when I was much, much younger, I was in the U.S. Marines, and one of the things that we used to train extensively on was using a compass. Now, even way back then, we had GPS systems, but the thought was, what do you do when this fails? Can you recognize that it's failing? And can you use a different way of accomplishing the mission that the ship has under one of these attacks?
Wow, that's great, Anthony. That's really useful tips there. And it's good to know that your maritime experience started in the Marines, which is more than Andy and I have. that is so interesting. Thank you both so much. And unfortunately, our time's come up here, but I'd just like to wrap up and end it by saying it's been a real pleasure speaking with you both. And thank you so much for sharing your insights on the topics. If anyone else would like more information on managing their business's cyber risks, please contact us at hello@kind.io, and we'd be more than happy to help. Once again, thanks Andy and Anthony, and to our listeners, and I look forward to welcoming you next time to the next Kind podcast, which is coming soon.